Hare Nam Sankirtan ki, Sankirtan Yoga ki, Nitya Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the humble devotees, all glories to the humble devotees, all glories to the humble devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're going to speak about how to live according to Bhagavad Gita. So this is what spiritual economics means. Economics, actually this word comes from Greek word economos. Economos means household. Means basically, how do we live? How do we get the things that we need to survive? Food, shelter, clothing. And, of course, it's not so complicated, although it's been made to be very complicated in the modern day. So Krishna, he gives instructions for us how to do that in Bhagavad Gita, and today we want to explore what that means. So we're going to begin at the end. And so what's the final lesson of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? Sarva dharmam parityagam amikam sharanam vraja. Sarva, all, dharma, Prabhupada translates as religion. And parityaga, give it up. This sounds strange, doesn't it? Krishna is God. We usually think God wants us to follow religion, right? But here he's saying, give up all kinds of religion. What does he mean? What does it mean, all kinds of religion? Does this mean that I stop being Christian and I become a Hare Krishna? Or what is it actually, does it mean? So to understand this clearly, we want to then go to the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. First chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is complaining to Krishna about having to fight the battle. And he's looking at all the men here that are going to be killed. And he thinks, oh, wait a minute, there's a problem here. Because there's a lot of men there. How many? 6 million? How many? 640 million. Different. 6 million, 64 million, 640 million. Anyway, there's a lot. Even if it's just the lower number of 6 million, that's probably more than was killed in World War II. So it's a big battle. It's a big deal. And so he's understanding. He says, wait a minute. Now, if all these men are killed, the ladies are not going to be protected. Then what's going to happen? Unscrupulous men are going to come, take advantage of them. Unwanted progeny will come. The family traditions will be lost. And then the whole culture collapses. So this is not a very good idea. So better, you know, we don't want to do that. Better that we just, I'll go to the forest. Forget it. And now, as important as Arjuna's, arguments are, it's more important actually to know where have they come from. What's the basis of Arjuna's arguments? Dharma Shastra, yeah. And at that time, they were following Vedic culture, right? Vedic culture, they followed Dharma Shastra. So the idea is that Arjuna, the culture of Arjuna's time, is the Vedic culture. The arguments that Arjuna is presenting are from Vedic culture. Still, even though that's culture based on the Vedas, which is in one sense, what we're trying to get to, right? Still, Krishna, he told him, Sarva Dharma Parityaga, fight the battle. Huh? Never mind all these arguments. Yes, they're good arguments, but fight the battle. Huh? So, what does this mean to us? What's the lesson there for us? In our modern day. We have Dharma in our modern society, right? Society gives us different kinds of dharmas, don't they? So I'm a foreigner here. Who's here from who's native of Belgium here? Oh, a lot of you. Okay. So, what's the culture of Belgium that I wouldn't know being a foreigner? What's the dharma of Belgium? Huh? Belgian beer? Belgium chocolate? Huh? No pay your taxes? Huh? Or cheat on your taxes, one or the other, right? Every culture has its dharma. I'll tell you a little story about dharma from America. After I was devotee, I lived in Prabhupada's temples for about 6 years before I got my own household. My wife and I first rented a house, and the place that we rented was, the grass wasn't so good. Now maybe, you know, if you're familiar with America, I haven't traveled around here much to know, but in America we have suburbs, right, where all the houses are set back off of the street for about 8 to 10 meters. And then there's grass in front. Everybody's so supposed to plant grass and flowers and make their yard look very nice. And so that was the way I was raised. And I thought, okay, the grass isn't very good. I'll go buy some grass seed and I'll make it look nice. So I was going to do that. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Where does grass come from? Grass seed come from? Grass seed comes from grass. And there's already some grass there. So I'll just let the grass grow. I'll do it the natural method, right? I'll let the grass grow. It'll produce its own seed, and very naturally it'll become nice looking, right? Well, I didn't know how long that process took or what it would look like. So after about 3 or 4 weeks, my grass is about this high, right? And the neighbor's grass is this high. And I knew I wasn't following the Dharma of America when my next-door neighbor, he sent his 12-year-old son over. He said, my dad wants to know when you're going to cut your grass. So I knew I wasn't following the Dharma of America. And they take this very seriously. Several years back, I read about one elderly woman in her 70s. She could no longer keep up her yard, and the police came to arrest her. Yeah. And then another one, also in Florida, one elderly man, his sprinkler system broke, so all of his grass turned brown. And they also came to take him away, right? So they take, this is the Dharma of America, they take it very seriously, right? So we have all kinds of dharmas like that in our culture. Huh? So is this what Krishna means when he says sarva dharma parityaga? Huh? All these dharmas, all these things that we think we are supposed to do according to our culture, huh? That's what we're supposed to give up. And what? Mam ekam sharanam braja. Do what I say here in Bhagavad Gita. So this is the idea that our culture is giving us so many dharmas. And economically, there's a lot of dharmas that we're supposed to do, right? We're supposed to have a job, not be a freeloader in society, have a job. Sometimes, right, we go out in Harinam, we're on the street corner chanting, and people, they drive by all the time, they say, get a job! You're not following the Dharma, you're not working, you're singing and dancing, right? So, get a job, pay your taxes, be a responsible citizen, like this. So, this is the Dharma. And we'll see that this dharma is in conflict with the dharma of Bhagavad Gita. So, let's continue. We talked about the last lesson in Bhagavad Gita. What's the first lesson in Bhagavad Gita? Somebody besides the pundit. Who else? Huh? You're not the body, right. We're not the body. Natvevaham chatunasam natvam nimejanaripaha. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So beginning with that sloka, and for about 20 more slokas, Krishna explains the nature of the soul, how the soul lives in the body, what the nature of the soul is, and so on. And then he changes the subject. Then for another 10 slokas or so, he encourages Arjuna to again fight in the battle. Now, he's going to give the second lesson in Bhagavad Gita. And what's the second lesson? The material ego has two main characteristics, I and mine. So the first two lessons of Bhagavad Gita are I and mine. But before Krishna gives the second lesson, he's going to preface his remarks. Beginning with text 239, now, so far I've explained to you the analytical knowledge of Sankhya philosophy. We're not the body. Now, he says, listen how to work without fruit or results. When you act with such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Now, this is a revolutionary statement. This and the next few verses that follow, this is very revolutionary. Because why? At that time, they were following Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, for the most part. There was some Jnana Kanda. But most people, they were following Karma Kanda. They wanted the results of their activity. That was the whole idea. You do the sacrifices that are mentioned in the Dharma Shastra, and you're going to get the punya, you're going to get the karma. That's what we want. We want to go to the heavenly planets. We want a higher birth next lifetime and all that. And Krishna says, now listen, I'm going to explain to you how to work without fruitive results. So this is should be shocking to Arjuna. He should be, what? Yeah, and then Krishna goes on to explain that men of small knowledge are attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities, elevation to the heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so on. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So that was the Dharma of the time. Again, there's two Dharmas, right? The Dharma of that we were talking about earlier, not to kill all these men and so on. And now here, this Dharma is Shishirada Gopinaki. This Dharma of Karma Kanda. And Krishna here, he's saying, this is for people who are less intelligent. He says, the minds of those who are too attached to sense, enjoyment, and material opulence and bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. Krishna here, he's prefacing his remarks by explaining that we're going to change the system of religion, right? And he explains that in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prita Naya Saranam Vinashaya Chaduskritam Dharma Samstapanartaya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. So he comes again and again to establish the principles of religion, and that's what Krishna is doing here in Bhagavad Gita. The old way, the old method of following the Karma Kanda, following the Vedic system, this is the long process of self-realization. It took many, many lifetimes to come, be born as a Sudra, then work your way up. When you become a perfect Sudra, the next life you can be born as a Vaishya and so on up the chain. In the meantime, you're going up and down to the heavenly planets and so on. So it took a long, long time for people to achieve liberation. Finally, when they became Brahmanas, they were eligible for liberation. So this is why it was a big deal. I'm a Brahmana. Yeah. It means I've already covered all of that territory. I've already done all those things. I've gone through all those births. Now I'm eligible to go back to Godhead. So that was the system. But Krishna is going to change all that. He's going to instead, replace it with the process of devotional service. And so this is what Bhagavad Gita is actually about. It's about how to execute devotional service so that we can go back to Godhead in just one lifetime. So those are the prefacing remarks before he gets into the second lesson in Bhagavad Gita, which begins with text 247. Kamani varikaraste ma paleshu kadachana markama palahiturbur mate sangosta karmani. Krishna says, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities and never be attached to not doing your duty. Now, this is a kind of an unusual group here, but does anybody here have a job? One person? Okay. And, Mataji, why do you work? Okay, why do you work? Huh? That's your motivation. What do you want from your work? Why are you working? You're avoiding the question. Why do you go to work? You're avoiding the question. Okay, Prabhu, why do you go to work? Why do you work? Okay. Well, you said you had a job, so. Huh? Why do you work? Yeah? Okay, you're a tough crowd here. Yes, for the money, right? I mean, that's why everybody goes to work, because they pay. You get paid, right? Why? Because you need money to live. So you go to work for the result of work, which is called the fruits of the work. But Krishna says, you're not entitled to the fruits of work. Huh? We have a problem here, don't we? You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but the results of your activities don't belong to you. There's a big conflict here between the dharma of modern society and what Krishna's telling us to do. Mamekam saranam vraja. Why is Krishna saying this? We have to understand this point. Huh? Why is Krishna saying this? You're not entitled to the fruits. Because Krishna is going to explain that karma keeps us bound in this material world. Krishna is trying to explain to us how to get out of this world in one lifetime. And to do that, we have to understand karma, and we have to understand how to free ourselves from karma by engaging in devotional service. So Krishna explains, he goes on, he explains a number of times that you're not entitled to the fruits of work. Now, we've heard Prabhupada explains that the Vedas, when they want to emphasize something, they say three times. They repeat it three times. Harinama, 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 eva kevalam, kalon, yasteva, nyasteva, nyasteva, gatiranyata. For emphasis. So how many times in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna explain that you're not entitled to the fruits of action? 16 times. Again and again and again, he's driving this point home. Of course, he says it in various different ways, but it's again and again he explains it. Okay, let's take for example text 249. Durena hyavara karma yoga dananchaya budao sharanam vanvicha kripana palahetava. Durena means get far away from something, like something has a bad smell, right? Want to get far away. Durena, get far away from what? Karma. Well, durena hyavara karma. And then finally he says, kripana palahetava. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. What's a miser? Person who does not know the value of something. Right? And we usually think of a miser as a person who has a lot of money, but they won't use it. But money is meant to be spent. So if you don't spend your money, you're a miser. So why does Krishna say, kripana palahetava? Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. Because they don't understand the value of the human form of life. We're using the human form of life to have sense gratification. When the human body is like it's like a vehicle, like a car. A vehicle takes you from one place to another. So human form of life is a vehicle to take us back to Godhead. We can use it to get from here to there. And that's the proper utility of it. That's the best utility of it. But if we don't use it for that purpose, if instead we use the human form of life for sense gratification, then, kripana, miser, you're missing the best opportunity. So we want to understand this point. Okay, next text. Text 50, Buddhiyokto jahatiha ube sukriti duskrite tasmad yogaya yujyasya yoga kamashu kaushalam. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad reactions in this life. So Krishna is explaining here, you're not entitled to fruits because that's karma. You don't want the karma. You want to free yourself from the work, from the results of work, how? By engaging in devotional service. And so he goes on and he explains this again and again and again, that by engaging in devotional service, we can free ourselves from the bondage of works. So this is the lesson. Now, the lesson Krishna's telling us, how to live. We live in such a way that we engage ourselves always in devotional service. Now, this is in conflict with the culture of modern society, the dharma of modern society. As we explain, the devotees, we go out, what do? Prabhupada, he taught us, go out and chant on the street, do Harinam Sankirtan, distribute books, and this way maintain yourselves. And this is what we did in our society in the very early days, without generally very much problem. We didn't really think about money so much, and money had its way of coming. In my temple, I became a devotee in Gainesville, Florida. And we lost our lease on the temple that we had, and we were looking around for another one. So we found a nice property. And it cost $100,000, which was a lot of money at that time. And we didn't have any money. And so we were trying to figure out, how are we going to do this? Well, by Krishna's grace, the money came together. I had $2,000 saved. And I said, I was saving that for to pay off my college loans. So I said to the temple president, what should I do? Should I pay off my loans or should I give the money for the temple? What do you think he said? Anyway, we gave it to Krishna. Anyway, money just came from here and there. One devotee got an inheritance and he gave that, and we got $10,000 together for a down payment, and we got the temple. So Krishna, he's the one who's supplying, he's maintaining all the living entities. So we didn't start to think about, should we go get jobs or something? Actually, I had a job before that. That was my first devotional service. I was working as an engineer, and I was giving, donations. I was taking prasadam at the temple, so I'd give donation for that. And so eventually I wound up giving 50% of my income to the temple, and I wanted to quit my job and just shave up and be a regular devotee, but I couldn't do that because... That was my devotional service, was to go to work. So I was thinking, how can I get out of this? And I started going to work wearing tilak. I thought they'd fire me. But they didn't do that. Then I was thinking, I'll just go to work in a dhoti too. But anyway, that place closed down and I didn't have to do that. In any case, Krishna, he's the one who's maintaining everything. We don't actually have to think about that. Let's take an example of Prabhupada's mission, Prabhupada himself. How did he start his movement? He explains that many of the other swamis and yogis, they come to America. Why? Because they wanted to get something from America, the rich country, America, right? But he said, I have not come to your country for taking anything. I have simply come to give this Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada's whole endeavor was to give Krishna consciousness. Well, I started the Sunday love feast. There wasn't any charge for that. Come, take prasadam. Fill yourself up to the neck. And so this was the whole idea. Prabhupada was just giving, giving, giving. And he was saying, Krishna will maintain this society. Don't worry, he's not a poor man. Immediately, as soon as you get money, spend it for the service of Krishna. And we used to do that. Whatever would come, we'd immediately spend. We used to have very opulent feasts, you know. And somehow or other, the money came. So it wasn't necessary. But then things changed a little bit. Beginning around 1975, when the temple projects, the big temple projects in India were beginning, we had Mumbai, Vrindavan, and Mayapur all being built at the same time. So there was a competition to see who could send the most money to the BBT. So then there started to be pressure to get money, because everybody wanted their temple to be number one on the list, right? Then we changed, actually, from being the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, in some regards, to the International Society for Money Consciousness. And that marked a significant change in our movement. And then things became, you know, you probably all know the history. You know? We started then doing all kinds of paraphernalia and paintings and carpets and candles and you name it, like that. So... anyway, the point is that Krishna, he's giving us the Dharma. How do we live here in Bhagavad Gita? Sarva Dharma Parityaga. What's the Dharma to give up? All the Dharmas of modern society. That's what he's telling Arjuna. Give up the Dharma of your culture in what? Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. So, Krishna, now, Krishna, he's explaining how to live. And in some of my writing, I explain that basically Krishna is telling us to live a gift culture, a gift economy based on devotional service. He explains in various slokas in Bhagavad Gita that one should always be engaged for the welfare of all sentient beings. He tells us that we have a right to perform our prescribed duty. Yes, okay, we do our duty, but the results don't belong to us. What are the results meant for then? They're meant for the welfare of all sentient beings. Anyway, through those in some other verses, Krishna's basically telling us to live a gift economy based on devotional service, which is the economy that Krishna uses. Right? Krishna, he has his own economy, nature. Nature has its economy. What is that? Everything is giving whatever they have. Usually it's some part of their body, right? And they take what they need. So we're not human beings. We can also live in this way. With the consciousness of giving, not getting. There's, besides Prabhupada's movement, there's many examples of this. There was one woman in America back in the 1950s. She called herself Peace Pilgrim. She wanted to protest a nuclear arms buildup between Russia and America. And so she decided she was going to walk from her house in Los Angeles to New York City as a protest. And along the way, she would speak to the media and so on like that. She left her house with no money, just depending solely on Krishna, basically like a sannyasi. She was elderly at the time, too. She's about 50 years old. And so she did that, and she found that all along the way, people came and they supplied whatever she needed. She later wrote some nice books, and in one of her books, she explains that, one interview, somebody asked her, why don't you work? She said, I don't work. She said, I work 18 hours a day. She said, you mean I don't work for money, but I work as a gift. I give my work as a gift, and people, they give gifts back to me. And in this way, I maintain myself. So in her book, she wrote that it's impossible to give without receiving. That as we give, we must receive. And so her effort was to emphasize this point. And this is the whole idea that I'm pushing in, the idea of spiritual economics, to have a gift culture. A gift economy. Our movement is built on gift culture. But we can actually solve all of the economic problems in this way. We don't have time to go into all the details, but if we look at the economics of modern society here, in this book, this is my book, Spiritual Economics. This book is not what I'm talking about today. This book is volume one. Its subtitle is Understanding and Solving the Economic Problem. And this book is an analysis of economic behavior according to consciousness and the gunas. And basically, what I do there is I trace the history of economics from goodness to passion to now economics of ignorance. Previously, in this world, in practically all of the indigenous cultures, they were cultures that practiced a gift economy. So this idea of a gift economy is nothing new. Everywhere around the world, and I cite different examples of that, how people, they didn't think about getting. They were simply, they would share. Whatever they had, they would share with their group. In this book, Bhaktivikas Maharaj's Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, he also explains that in your group, or your village, you're part of a group, and whatever you have, it's not yours alone, it belongs to the group. You get it as part of the group. And last night we spoke about that, how in that culture, people, they have great security because they know they're being taken care of by everybody else. And also we have obligation to take care of others. Anyway, modern society basically is characterized by tamagun, which means taking, exploiting, stealing, getting whatever money, whatever way you can, through force. Right? They kidnap people and they rob them of their kidneys. Right? Person that gets kidnapped wakes up and sees he's got a stitches there on his side. And only have one kidney now. They're doing such terrible things like that. If you read about or hear about the terrible things that are going on in this world, it's really disturbing. But anyway, it's gone from goodness to passion to ignorance. And the situation is such that they're not going to be able to solve the economic problems of modern society with the efforts that they're making. We can guarantee this. Forget what Merkel's doing and all these guys, World Bank or IMF. They're not going to be able to solve the economic problem because they don't understand what it is. Where's the economic problem coming from? Prabhupada explains, what's the source of all the problems in the world? Consciousness. They ask Prabhupada, why is the world polluted? He says, because your consciousness is polluted. So why do we have economics of ignorance? Economics of tamagun. Why? Because the consciousness is in tamagun. People are engaged in rajagun and tamagun, and they think, oh, we can have a nice world with nice things. No. The result of tamagun is destruction. The result of rajagun is suffering. So if you're engaged in rajagun and tamagun, what are you going to get? Suffering and destruction. It's very clear. So no plan that they can make for solving the economic problem is going to work. Anyway, I can go into much more detail about that. But the point is that people must understand what the economic problem is. And the most important question about the economic problem that's not being asked is, why is the spiritual being living in the material world? They can't even understand to ask that question, but that's the most fundamental question that needs to be asked to understand the economic problem. So, the solution, what's the solution? In rajagun and tamagun, there's no solution to the economic problem. Rajagun means more. More, 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 more. And this is what the environmentalists are complaining about. They say, you can't have infinite economic growth on a finite planet. Sooner or later, it's not going to work. And then, of course, in tamagun, there's no solution to the economic problem because some people are stealing from others. Right now, we have 1 billion people waking up every day not knowing where the next meal is going to come from. We have in America the Walton family, the family that owns the Walmart store, these big, huge stores that sell at low, low prices, bargains. The six families, the six members of that Walton family, their net worth is the same as the poorest 30% of people in America. So this is the economics of tamagun. This is what we wind up with by the influence of rajagun and tamagun. So there's no solution to the economic problem in rajagun and tamagun. But in sattvagun, there is no economic problem. Sattvagun, nature. The trees, they have their economic needs. The animals, the birds, bugs, whatever. They have their economic needs. Their economic needs are taken care of very nicely. There's no depression or recession, right, for the birds, right? Krishna's economics is one of giving. And it works like this. It's based on life. You plant one seed. Say you plant a seed of wheat. How many do you get back? 50 on the average. This is a 5,000% rate of return. How much does the bank give? 2%, maybe? If you plant corn is very generous. You get back 100,000% rate of return. Rice, you get back about a 10,000% rate of return. So Krishna, he's generous. He's giving. And what does he want? Some reciprocation. Okay, you plant the seed. He waters it. You just have to harvest it. Then what do? We cook it up. We offer it to the deities. We offer it to Krishna. He takes it. He doesn't keep it. But he offers it back to us as prasadam, right? And then we take it and we offer it back to Krishna again, right? As the fire of digestion, right? So there's this loving reciprocation that goes on between Krishna and his devotees. This is the economy. This is how Krishna's economy works. This is how we're meant to live in this world. And this is how the devotees are meant to live, to show the world an example how to solve not only the economic problem, but all the problems of modern society by devotional service and Krishna consciousness. The problem is that we have not, in our society, we cannot show that alternative because we have not created that alternative yet. Instead, we compromised ourselves with modern society and we depend on them for our maintenance. Missing the point. Instead of learning how to depend on Krishna in his economics of agriculture and cow protection, we are depending upon the materialists and their money, their cheating money system. Consequently, although we have a wonderful Shastra, Bhagavad Gita, if we don't follow it, what's the point? We have to follow it. Krishna says, Mame kam sarnam vraja, aham tvam sarva papebhyo, I'll protect you. Don't worry. You follow what I say here. I'll protect you from the reaction. So that's what we need to do. I remember hearing about one Gurukuli, one young man graduated from Vrindavan Gurukul some years back. And he said, okay, we're all finished with Gurukula. Now what do we do? They told him, well, better go get a job. He said, get a job? But all my life you're telling me they're karmis or they're sense enjoyers, they're, you know, this, that, the other thing. Now you want me to go get a job? Why? Because we haven't created an alternative for them. We haven't given it, we don't provide a place for our young people. We don't provide a place for our own men, what to speak of our children. It means we have to give shelter, economic support. And that economic support is given by Krishna in agriculture. So therefore, agriculture is the economic basis of the vanashram culture. It's not the whole culture. It's not that everybody who does engages in vanashram culture is a farmer. No, but farming or agriculture is the economic basis of it. 5,000, 10,000, 100,000% rate of return. Krishna's very generous. And it's really not a lot of work. In Ukraine and Russia, we see all these grandmothers, babushka. They're out there, they have beautiful gardens. So if a 70-year-old woman can keep a nice garden, certainly a 30-year-old young man can do it without too much trouble. We have to address the economic situation for our society. As long as we continue to compromise ourselves by taking shelter of the money and materialistic society, we cannot actually give this world what Krishna consciousness is meant to give the world. Krishna consciousness is meant to show the world how to live happily, and at the end of this life go back to Godhead. But we can't show that as long as we continue to live the way they live. So, sarva dharma parityaga. When Krishna says that, he means give up what? This modern culture. Parityaga. Mam ekam saranam vraja. Do what I say in Bhagavad Gita. Aham tvam sarva papibhyo mokshayishami masuchaha. In this way, we please Krishna. We learn how to depend on Krishna. This is called surrender and devotional service. Depending on Krishna, he's my maintainer. Do we believe that? Are we willing to act as if that's actually the reality? This is what we have to do. If we, and we can do this even on an individual basis, that we simply determine what it is, what is our gift, what do we want to do, what do we want to give to the world. Each of us is a wonderfully unique person. We each have our gift, which is unique, something that we can give that nobody else can, even in the spiritual world. Every devotee has some way of serving Krishna, which is unique and wonderful, which satisfies Krishna the way no other person can satisfy Krishna. So therefore, let us understand, what is our gift that we have? What do we want to give to this world? Let us start thinking about that. What am I going to give? And turn around this whole the whole way the world works by giving instead of thinking about getting. And we'll find that what we need will be given to us. It's very wonderful. Our sannyasis live like this, right, Maharaj? They're giving. They're not working. Our renunciates. That's my experience for 6 years. I'm living like sannyasi. I left America with $300. Went to Ukraine. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't have any plan for going back. I kind of felt like Prabhupada going to the States with $7, right? But what I found was that whatever I needed, Krishna provided. One time I needed a substantial amount of money, $12,000. It just kind of came, miraculously. So, please think about this. What do you want to give? What do you want to make your life to give to the world? Think about that. You can change your own life then, change the economics of your own life, and then together as a society, we have to establish this alternative economic society called Vanashram Dharma. We don't have too much time for questions, but I'll stay afterwards for as long as anybody has any questions if you want to ask. Okay? What's the basis for their saying that? Just because that word is there, dharma, vanashram dharma, give up all dharma. Mam ekam saranam vraja. What's Krishna's instruction? Krishna gives dharma. How is he giving it? Sometimes they raise this question in regard to the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Lord Chaitanya rejected vanashram dharma. But we have to look at what's the question. What was the question that Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy? Tell me something about the ultimate goal of life. The ultimate goal of life. So Ramananda Roy begins with that answer because there were people who were thought at that time that that was how you achieve the ultimate goal of life, right? Later it was at Mahaprabhu when he's discussing with who? The followers of Ramanuja? Huh? Madhvacharya. Yeah. The followers of Madhvacharya, they're saying, yes, we follow Vanashram Dharma. They thought that that was the ultimate goal of life. So therefore, Ramananda Roy begins with that answer. No, that's not the ultimate goal of life. Mahaprabhu says, say something more. Okay? But it's a path to the ultimate goal of life. Hmm? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he explains that Vanashram Dharma is required to help people come to the stage of Vaishnava. And this was Prabhupada's intention also. In the room conversation, February 14th, 1977, Prabhupada's explaining that Vanashram Dharma is for the mass of people to help bring them, because they're not going to become devotees like us. You know, we're not going to be able to get the whole world to somehow or other, you know, they're going to get it, and then they're all going to become Vaishnavas like we are. That's not going to happen. So there must be a method to help them come closer to Krishna, and that method is called Vanashram Dharma. Anyway, this evening I'm going to speak in tonight and tomorrow night I'll speak in much more detail about Vanashram, and we'll cover those points in detail. Okay? 5:37, right. No more questions? Come on. Come tonight, we're going to discuss that. Tonight. Yes. I'm sorry? Okay. The point is, okay. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, the point about that no shelter. Oh, the Gurukula. Okay, yeah. So the young devotee who graduated from Gurukula, and they told him to get a job. And the point is that we have not created an economic alternative in our society. There must be, we have to have, without having a way to maintain ourselves independently of the dominant culture, we must... We must participate in that culture. But that culture is atheistic, materialistic, and so on like that. And by that association, it's very hard to maintain Krishna consciousness. Okay? Any of you men who have had a job, you're working, and you're trying to be Krishna conscious at the same time, you know what a difficult thing this is. Very difficult. You know, I have three children. I had that experience. When I was a young devotee, developed my Krishna consciousness, and then when I start having to work, I could see my consciousness just going down, 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 right? Because why? You don't have time for sadhana. I'll give you an example. Alachua, Florida, biggest community in America, about 1,500 devotees. How many devotees come to Mangalarti? Maybe 40. Usually less, maybe about the same number as here, right? Why is that? Because most of them, they live in the dominant culture. They're living in a culture that they have different way of, you know, they have to be at work at 8 o'clock, so they don't have time for 5 hours of sadhana in the morning. So they get up, you know, quickly they chant the rounds if they get those done. So they don't have time to, you know, hear Bhagavatam. You know, and the pressure of modern society today is no time. Nobody has time. So this is because we haven't created an economic alternative. That economic alternative is not meant to be, how do we make money from cows, right? We're going to start a dairy business. No. It's not the how do we do commercial agriculture? No. It's how do we maintain ourselves simply from the land. That way, of course, now this is a change of lifestyle. But the difference is, in this Vanashram culture, I'm just going to say a few things here because I'm not sure how many of you are going to be here tonight. So I got to take advantage of this opportunity. Modern society gives us many benefits in terms of tangible things. We have electronics. We have nice clothes or house. We have automobiles. We have things. We have stuff. But what we don't have in modern society is peace of mind. We don't have happiness. We don't have time for our relationships. People in America, they spend more time shopping than they spend with their children. So the things that are actually really meaningful to us, the things that are really important to us, we don't have time for that. We don't get that. We get stuff instead. But stuff doesn't make us happy. In the Vanashram culture, the benefits are non-tangible. The benefits are we have time for our relationships. We have time for our sadhana. We have security in each other. We take care of each other. We have nice relationships. So that the tangible things, they may be less. We may have not so many tangible things, but they're not actually that important. If we actually have things that are meaningful to us, that make us happy, you know, we can do without an iPhone, the latest iPhone or, tablet computer or something, you know. So there's many, many benefits to be had. Anyway, does that help you with that? Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea. That's the idea. Anyway, we'll speak about that in detail tonight and tomorrow night. Okay. All right. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, we're in an awkward situation. We have to have one foot in each culture, right? Krishna, he's no poor man. If we endeavor to follow the instructions of Krishna, Mame kam sarnam vraja, aham tvam sarva papebhyo, I'll protect you. Certainly, he'll help us. Look at what we have here. How is this, this building, this property, so many properties we have in Europe were acquired by the devotees doing book distribution in the 70s and 80s. So it's not an impossible thing to do. To live our philosophy and in this way be able to build up a wonderful culture. So we can do it. We have to actually understand what it is that we need to do and do the needful. Everybody on board? Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.